Cities have their own archives, not in books, though we keep those too, but in habit. A street remembers the weight of traffic. A doorframe remembers how many hands have pushed it open. And a people, even when they do not speak of the past, arrange their lives around its shape. This is record too, filed before first light in the capital. Within walking distance of the great archive and within sight, if one stands at the right angle, of the council's court, I am not recording this to accuse. I am recording it because the record must contain the moment when the familiar becomes questionable. Outside the archive, the capital conducts itself as if stability is a form of worship. The avenues nearest the central district are cut in clean lines, wide enough for processions that rarely happen, and for the long, low ground transports that glide without beasts. Their motion is quiet, almost polite. The crystals in their housings, cinderstone, carry light in a way fire never could. A steady radiance, regulated, dependable. Above them, bridges, galleries, terraces, stone and glass, metalwork chased with old motifs no one can name with confidence. Public art worn smooth by weather and touch, as if people have sought comfort from it for generations. And at the city's heart, rising behind its permitted districts, there is the council's structure. It is not a palace. It is not a temple. It is an aperture in the world, an immense built hollow of stone and vaulted air open to the sky, shaped to receive creatures who do not enter by doors. Most citizens do not look at it for long, not because it is forbidden, but because attention feels noticed. From the archive's highest gallery, the mountain chain is visible, a long spine of dark stone beyond the city's edge. Somewhere within it lies the fortress where the council dwells when it does not descend to hold court. It is spoken of the way one speaks of weather or deep water. Present, powerful, not negotiated with. I have lived here most of my life and have never approached it. That is not unusual. The task that began this record did not begin in the streets. Every decade, the archive conducts an integrity review of its oldest indexes. Not for ceremony, there is no audience for our diligence, but to ensure that our memory has not quietly warped under its own weight. Dates are checked, names are aligned, references are traced back to shelf and source. Most discrepancies are mundane. Spelling drift, changes in calendars, duplications produced by conscientious copyists. What I did not expect was patterned absence. There is a century, roughly 700 years before this record, that appears in our systems like an object wrapped in cloth. It is not marked as sealed. It is not listed as destroyed. It is not labeled restricted. It is simply thin. Trade ledgers that should span decades resolve into controlled summaries. Census registries record totals without households. Temple archives list festivals without hymns, dedications without testimony, names without correspondence. At first, I assumed consolidation. During stable eras, records compress. When nothing dramatic occurs, scribes summarize rather than elaborate. But compression has a language. This century does not compress evenly. Grain yields remain precise. Water levels are painstaking. Minor boundary disputes are documented down to the final arbitration mark. Yet, education records cease. Civic construction projects are named, but never described. Correspondence between regions stops, not with farewell, but mid-sentence, replaced by later summaries that refuse detail. What remains reads like scaffolding with no structure attached. So I consulted secondary indexes, three cataloging systems, separated by generations, reference materials that no longer exist, shelf numbers that lead nowhere, titles cited in margins but absent from the stacks. In one case, a junior archivist centuries ago wrote, "Verified at time of copy," which means the material stood here once. It was not lost to fire. It was not claimed by rot. It was removed. The archive does not record acts of removal unless instructed. That instruction would have come from authority. We are taught, quietly, early, the dragons do not edit history as a matter of temperament. Their involvement in the archive is typically broad. Mandates of preservation, restrictions on sites deemed unsafe, permissions for excavations, the details, always the details, are left to us, which makes this absence difficult to place. There is no decree, no sealing order, no marginal note explaining intent, only silence, maintained across centuries, with a care that suggests design. I found myself standing before a stretch of shelving that felt incomplete, not empty, incomplete, as if the architecture had learned to expect weight that never returned. I have spent my life among shelves. I know the difference. And in that moment, a thought presented itself, uninvited, unwelcome, and entirely logical. If a century can be thinned without a record of thinning, then the absence may not be local. It may be layered. A single century is visible because it is close enough to touch, close enough to have survived in the habits of our catalogs. But the mechanisms that produced it feel older than the century itself, like the outermost ring of a much larger design. For now, I have filed the discrepancy under internal review. No notice has been issued. No inquiry has been raised. At the time of this record, I still believe the omission may have been necessary, protective, prudent, but I have marked the century, and once something is marked, it has a way of drawing the eye to other marks, older ones, fainter ones, that have been trained to go unnoticed. This is record two, filed under absence. The city remains lit, the court remains silent, and the archive does what it has always done. It waits.